Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by Career Management Associates. I'm David Chulo. It's about all things in the human resource world. We're going to bring in local, regional, and national guests, and we're going to talk about a variety of topics and explain why human resource management is critical to your business success so that you can make decisions to keep and retain great talent. Hey, listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and Maine.DaleCarnegie.com. And today our guest is Brian Heath, Division Manager, Worksite Benefits for Combined Benefits United. Brian, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Dave. Good to be here.
So we're going to be talking about supplemental benefits. First of all, what the heck is supplemental benefits?
I think most people think of supplemental benefits as products that you can buy that help you offset unexpected medical costs, which come in the form of deductibles, coinsurance, and things like that.
So a company or an individual who is thinking about, hey, we have medical coverage, but our coverage now includes a $3,000, $4,000, $5,000 deductible. How can we help our employees supplement that?
Yes, that would be exactly where it would come in. I think today as employees basically either have to have a slush fund somewhere, rich relatives, and even sometimes you see people using GoFundMe sites for unexpected medical bills. So there's very, very little alternatives out there for an employee other than the supplemental side.
So let's talk a little bit about these voluntary benefits, because that's what they are, right? They're voluntary benefits. So is this employer paid, employee paid? Let's start with the basics.
Sure. Typically, it's employee paid, and traditionally, it's been that way for a very, very long time. Employers are starting to kick in on plans either buying a certain amount per week or purchasing a particular popular plan. But to answer the question most accurately, it's probably 95% still employee paid directly out of their pocket, payroll deduct at work.
So when we're talking about payroll deductions, are they taxable, non-taxable? Because obviously your medical insurance, for example, is typically not taxable.
Correct. So there's a couple of ways that it gets done. Pre-tax and post-tax is where that comes in. Pre-tax allows an employer to take out the dollars for the premiums before taxes come out of the money, and the employee and the employer save some in that regard. And then there's sometimes reasons for doing it post-tax, where it comes out of the net balance of what the employee is getting paid that week.
So, okay, you have these potential opportunities for somebody to save on their health insurance or save on other aspects. These are flexible plans. How do these plans come into somebody's budget or a company budget?
So what most employees do is sit down and decide, first of all, how much spendable income they have. When we're talking with employees, oftentimes they'll think of an hour's worth of wages per week, $8, $10, $12 per hour. Oftentimes employees start out by thinking, and rightly so, that they really don't have discretionary income at the end of the week. Things are tight. But once they hear about the details, oftentimes they want to set aside money for it.
All right, so let's talk about an example of one. We'll start right up front. Mm-hmm. What is the most popular voluntary benefit that is typically, you know, taken by employees or employers?
Sure. It varies with employees, but I would say the top three would be disability, payroll deduct life insurance, and accident plans. There's a few more in there that tend to get some play, but out of those, disability is something that is very important for employees, especially if they've ever been in a situation where they've had a medical event or a reason they can't work. The accident plan is probably the one that has the most pizzazz and the most pop. It's the one that, when I'm meeting with employees, takes the glaze off the eyes the quickest, I guess you'd say, because it's immediate payments for things that happen every day.
All right, so let's start with disability insurance. We know there's short-term, we know there's long-term. Mm-hmm. Are these voluntary benefits supplemental plans for both?
Yes, the short-term disability is the most popular, comes in forms of 3, 6, 12 months. It kicks in after 0 days or up to 30 days of being out of work. They are all supplemental. They can be purchased in part by the employer as well. The employee decides how much they want and how much they want to spend. It's always based on their income, and we do a certain percentage of their gross income is what they're eligible for as far as a monthly or a weekly paycheck.
So if somebody says, hey, I want short-term disability, mm-hmm.
There are criteria for that, I assume. Is there a pre-screening, or how does that work?
Yeah, a couple different ways it can go, depending on the carriers that we use. There's guarantee issue for short-term disability. That's enormously helpful. We had a very, very large account assisted living center in Maine, and we had a guarantee issue product there for them. They were able to pick it up and include people that otherwise wouldn't be covered on the plan simply because their health history through health questions would have disallowed it. So when you sign people up for the disability, oftentimes the size of the group helps and the participation helps, but it still comes down to an individual's decision as to whether or not they want to participate, whether they feel the product has value, and whether they have the money or not.
So we're talking about somebody, so you'll be asking some questions in regards to their health, mm-hmm. and that it's like an insurance policy, right?
It is,
right?
Yeah.
Right? It's an insurance policy. So that will determine whether or not the person is eligible. However, if the organization provides it as a whole, then they sometimes can buy these guaranteed policies.
Yeah,
is that correct?
Right. There's a percentage that's required for guarantee issue. If an employer does want to participate, which generally means that everybody's going to get the coverage, that blows by the number that is needed for guarantee issue. And so, therefore, the employer is doing a great service, actually, in that particular case for employees who otherwise couldn't get it.
Yeah. So we're talking about short-term. How about long-term?
Long-term disability is something that is less popular because, obviously, the number of times or the percentages of people being out for a very long time are much less. People do pick it up. Generally, it coincides with short-term disability. So if somebody has a short-term disability plan that lasts them 6 months, they'll want to pick up long-term disability that kicks in at 6 months and takes them either to 2 years, 5 years, or a lifetime. I find less numbers of employees interested in the long-term disability. Again, we're going back to spendable dollars, how much they have, and short-term is much more important to an employee typically because car accidents, heart attacks, and bouts with illnesses generally are all covered under short-term disability.
So when an individual gets these plans, and I'll just ask the question now, even though I'm sure we'll talk about it later, let's say they leave their employer.
Mm-hmm.
Can they take it with them, or is that something that is, you know, only with when they're with an employer?
Yeah, portability is a big factor for employees these days, and they can take them with them. There are some group policies that have to be retained by the employer. Certainly short-term disability is one that is typically not portable, although it can be. A lot of employees do port the coverage, as we call it, signing up for a direct deduction out of a bank account, checking account, and continue on with the same coverage that they had while they were an employee. And oftentimes that means that they have insurance that maybe is filling a void where they've left the employer, they don't have health insurance, and this is the only thing they have to rely on, although it's not going to take the place of, it is seen as a bridge.
No, I understand that. Okay, that makes sense. You then talked about life insurance as another voluntary benefit.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Life insurance is becoming more and more popular. Life insurance is an interesting product these days. We're about as underinsured in life insurance these days as we've ever been with people in the market. I think a big part of that reason is that the door-to-door, if that's the right term, sales person in your neighborhood isn't prolific that way anymore. I often say that I think probably the two biggest reasons people don't buy life insurance these days is because there's really a couple of ways to do it. One is on the internet. You have to go on, hope you hit the right button. The other one is having a salesperson like me come to your house on a Thursday night and stay too long at the kitchen table. Both of those things are not very attractive to employees or just general public these days. So when they get a chance to, in the environment where they work, to sit down with a trusted advisor that they've already talked to about disability and these other plans to also pick up some life insurance, we're finding that there's a lot of traction there. People want to go.
So there's many different types of life insurance.
Yes.
There's whole life, there's term life, there's assorted other parts. These supplemental plans cover them all, or different types, or how do they work in terms of the life insurance area?
It really falls in two categories. Term life insurance, you're buying just the death benefit. And cash value insurance, whole or indexed, is something that is used by people that want to build money for retirement. What's great about policies these days is they come with living benefits. The old joke about why would I buy life insurance, it doesn't pay unless I die, has now been expanded in a big way to covering pieces and parts of that policy that pay you while you're still alive fighting an illness. There's accelerated benefits these days. We talk a lot about that with employees. Typically, they're unfamiliar with that because it's something that's come in the market in the last 5 years or so. But it can help somebody keep the mortgage paid. It can help somebody keep the bills paid. as they go through the process of trying to stay well, their life insurance policy becomes a vehicle to take money from, whereas otherwise they might not have any at all. So it's both a living benefit and a death benefit these days when we're talking about life insurance.
And that is a different way of thinking about life insurance because that's not the typical life insurance that you or I may have known in the past.
Yeah, correct. I mean, I'll sometimes say, do you have the old kind of life insurance or the new kind of life insurance? And it's not particular to any one company. If you start looking on the online, you'll find a lot of companies have moved to what's called accelerated benefits for critical illness, for chronic illness, and the like. In many cases, they're paying out where a long-term care plan would pay, and lots of my employees don't have long-term care plans. So it's a great alternative to create a nest egg for the family should something happen, but also take care of bills should you get into something rough.
We're talking with Brian Heath from Combined Benefits United. We're talking about supplemental benefit plans. I'm your host, David Chulo, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour. Okay, Brian, you know, we've been talking about, you said, the two most popular disability life insurance. You said a third, accident plans. All right, so there's a lot to this because there's a lot of different types of accident plans. I think the best thing that I could ask you to do is let's start at the top. Let's work our way through these, right? I'm sure we're going to go into our next segment in a few minutes to do that. Tell me what the most popular accident plan is.
First of all, the things that surprise an employee the most about an accident plan as we're educating them in their place of work is that it's a 24/7 plan. It pays without regard to any other insurance. I usually end up saying that two or three different times during the presentation because ultimately someone will ask me at the end if it covers with this kind of insurance or that kind of insurance. So that's a hard one for people to get their brain around. Typically, things work if something else isn't working. And these plans cover 24/7 without coordination of any of the other health insurance. So you can be being paid 100% full workman's comp for an injury that you have at work and get 100% full coverage on your accident plan. You can be at work, you can be not at work. You can have 10 accidents in a week, you can have none in a year. The plan pays based on any accident that you take to a doctor. So that includes burning yourself while you're cooking on the weekend, to ramming around on a four-wheeler, to, God forbid, a car accident that puts you in the hospital 10 days. All of those things are paid in an accident plan completely separately from any other insurance that you have.
So an accident plan covers you with cash. Is that correct?
So, absolutely.
So most of us have health insurance or whatever, and that gets paid directly to the doctor typically, right? And you pay a copay.
Correct.
Explain how this process works.
Yeah, so that's really how I explain to the employees. Your health insurance is there. It's far more important in the grand scheme of things because you're going to have some huge bills without it. But the health insurance only ever pays the doctor, the surgeon, the hospital, the physical therapist. The accident plans and supplemental in general only ever pays you. In other words, the money never goes through the business office. The business office is never asking you about the money because it's completely separate. The money, when it's paid through an accident plan, cancer plan, what have you, is always paid directly to the policyholder. So when I'm marketing a plan to my employees, I want them to know that this is a plan that you're paying a certain amount for per week. And when you use it, we'll help you with that claim, and that'll result in a check that goes 100% of the time to you.
Okay, so my son, my daughter, my wife, how does that – do they get covered under these plans?
Yeah, sure. They can all get covered. Let me give you an example of an accident that you get paid for. I'll make it very, very simple. I've probably said this before in employee meetings. You roll your ankle, and it's going down the stairs shoveling, or it's at work, or wherever it is. It's in a game. You roll your ankle. You go to the emergency room. They take a picture. And you come back with a fracture. You walk out with a wrap and a pair of crutches. That's pretty simple right there. That's about as basic as it gets on an accident plan. So in plans that we sell, there are dollar amounts already predetermined for each one of those things. The crutches, the emergency room, the broken bone, life flight, physical therapy later, have a surgery, stay in the hospital 3 days. All of those things already have predetermined numbers on them. So in that particular example with the carrier that we use, that would result in a check for $2,225. To my employees, I'll say that's not Powerball, but for most of us, over $2,000 in addition to whatever your health insurance is going to pay, and of course with the deductibles and coinsurance stacking up on the kitchen table, that is a pretty nice chunk of money that people can use, and again, 24/7 without regard to any other insurance. So that's an example right there that gets employees really thinking, like, okay, I could pay a small amount per week for this plan, and should that ever happen, this is what will happen on in my mailbox, which is a check.
So we just said a small amount. What do these type of programs cost? And are they susceptible to number of members of the family and all those other parts?
Sure. You can add in a spouse. You can add in children. You can have the whole family. A typical accident plan for an individual that we work with would be anywhere from $5 to $7 per week. One of the plans we sell is $6.51 a week. So it is an amount of dollars that seems to be very, very reasonable for employees once they hear the details. But that's the range. I typically tell people almost all of my supplemental benefits range between $3 and $10 per week, depending on which one you pick and how much coverage that you're getting.
You're listening to the HR Power Hour. We're speaking with Brian Heath, Combined Benefits United. And you're listening to the HR Power Hour on 100.5 FM. And we'll be right back.
At 154 years old, Verrill Dana has an illustrious history and more than seven generations of legal expertise. With more than 130 attorneys across seven offices from Maine to Washington, D.C., Verrill Dana serves clients across the country and around the world. HR professionals, business leaders, and in-house counsel count on Verrill Dana, one of the premier labor and employment law practices in the Northeast. Contact them today at verrilldana.com.
Does your basement or crawl space have damp, musty odors? Do you worry about indoor gases and pollutants? Everyday living generates moisture that can nourish mold and odors. Even asthmatic triggers, indoor pollutants linked to respiratory ailments, birth defects, and cancers can become trapped in your home. You can't buy health, but you can buy Wave's moisture control and air quality products. Wave Home Solutions, for a dry, healthy home. Satisfaction guaranteed. Go to dryhome123.com. That's dryhome123.com.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour, presented by CMAcareer.com and Maine.DaleCarnegie.com. We are talking today with Brian Heath. He's with Combined Benefits United. We're talking about supplemental benefits or voluntary benefits, which employees can purchase as well as organizations can purchase for their employees. You know, Brian, we talked about the fact in the last segment about accident benefits, which are basically if somebody has an accident, they get paid cash. Mm. Tell me about some of the carriers behind that. We've heard of things like Aflac.
Sure.
Right? We heard of things like Aflac and other things. Is this similar? Is it different? How does that work?
You know, I would say the policies between the carriers, there's Aflac, there's Colonial. We use a lot of Washington National, Transamerica, Allstate. There's many carriers out there. The accident plans, cancer plans, in what they cover typically would be more similar than different. So any accident plan is going to cover broken bones and stitches, stays in the hospital and ambulance. So in that regard, very, very similar. Each plan will have a few differences in them, but overall pretty much the same.
One of the other plans that's interesting that I know you carry is a voluntary benefit for cancer insurance.
Yes.
Now, that's a hugely interesting area to cover because cancer is such a prolific thing here in the country. So could you explain the program, explain how it works, how somebody might be eligible, and some of the restrictions around it?
Sure. Let me start by saying that of all bankruptcies in the country, there's a statistic out there that says that more than half of those are caused by medical expenses, and a great majority of the people that go bankrupt because of medical expenses have health insurance. So the amount of costs being carried by employees these days, should they, God forbid, have a bout with cancer or some critical illness, is extremely high. And that's not only because health insurance has higher deductibles, that's also because health insurance doesn't cover things that it used to. Co-pays have turned into co-insurance. There's lots of different things that have happened besides just the deductibles. So as people get into chronic or even terminal illnesses, cancer being chief among them, there's an amount of expense that piles up that most people are just not prepared for.
That's no question about that. Is, again, this is supplemental insurance mm-hmm. to your medical insurance.
Yes.
And, again, it pays cash for these situations. Talk a little bit about that plan.
Sure. The cancer plan is similar in some ways as the accident plan in that it covers as you are treated for your cancer from beginning to end, and it's paying for things. Instead of stitches and crutches and broken bones, it's paying for chemo and radiation and biopsies and surgeries, stays in the hospital. And once someone has purchased a cancer plan from us, then they are eligible to use that plan throughout their treatments of cancer. So we'll start a client out with a initial diagnosis benefit, which can be anywhere from $1,000 to $10,000. As they progress through that, they're getting paid as they're being treated. There's no limit to the number of treatments. There's no time limit that the policy runs out. They simply have this plan alongside whatever other coverages and cash and on hand that they have at the moment to help them through all of those expenses that pile up as they go through. I'll give you a couple examples. We have a plan that pays $250 for radiation and chemo. And these amounts can vary as well, and an employee can purchase up or purchase down. But to give you an example, for someone who would be going through initial treatment with cancer, $250 for every chemo and radiation is an amount that's paid as they go, whether that's 30 days in a row or whether it's over a period of time. I'll give you an example. My brother, who had neck cancer 3 years ago, and he's okay now, but for 30 days, his first course of treatments at the Harold Alphon Center was a zap in the neck with radiation. He'd roll in with his landscaping equipment at 8 o'clock in the morning, lay down on the gurney, get a zap in the neck, and then walk back out. 30 days in a row, he got that treatment, which it turns out is very common for all kinds of cancers. If he'd had my plan, and by the way, my brother did not have my plan at 44 years old. He didn't think that he needed it, and that's not necessarily all that unheard of. But if he'd had my plan and had the radiation benefit at $250 per benefit times 30 days, his check for just that month would have been $7,500. He asked me over family dinner about a year from then, after he'd been all the way through it, kind of sheepishly, what would the plan have paid if I'd had it? And best I could figure, because I didn't look at all his bills, but we figured somewhere in $20,000, $25,000 range, which again is not an inheritance. But for my brother, who owned a landscaping business, and all the bills that piled up, including having to hire people to mow his lawns and all the things that went along with it, it would have been an enormous help and probably helped him dig out far faster. So the plan stays with somebody. It's paying for the smallest things that you might not even think of. And as you go through, you're working, in our case, with our company. We have claims specialists, and they just continue to send those bills and statements from the providers in, and those get turned into cash, basically, that gets mailed to my policyholder. So throughout the process, when someone's dealing with cancer, they can have bills coming in from the hospital, bills coming in from the insurance company, and at the same time, checks coming in envelopes that they can cash and take and use for whatever they want, which, of course, is most often living expenses.
So there are some restrictions to the cancer plan.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So explain what the restrictions could be.
Sure. In most cases, if somebody's had cancer recently, they will not be able to buy a cancer plan. So that's an immediate knockout question. If somebody has AIDS, if somebody has a family history, sometimes can come into play. There's various plans. But the cancer plan is issued at a very, very high rate. So typically, things like that don't come into play much. The rate for the cancer is the same for everybody. So I can sell a plan between $3 and $4, $5 per week and have somebody covered. And then if they want to add on family and spouse and all those kind of things. Typically, skin cancer is something that's excluded from cancer plans, incidentally. Almost all internal cancers are covered. Skin cancer is so prolific these days, it would probably increase the cost enough. But that's an exclusion sometimes on policies.
So somebody potentially should be looking at this really at the early stages, right? Especially if they have a history or especially if they are younger, because those things can pop up.
Yes, absolutely. And cancer occurs. I mean, there's unfortunately children's hospitals for cancer. So having a cancer plan in place, it's $3-4 a week. I kid employees, you're pouring more coffee down the drain than that every week. Buy a cancer plan. If you don't use it, then it's just like not using your car insurance, I suppose. We even have riders that you can add to these cancer plans that say that if you don't use your cancer plan after 25 years, you'll literally get all your premium refunded back to you. That's a higher premium to start with, of course. But there are ways to consider the devastating effects of cancer and also ways to consider how would I pay for it otherwise.
You know, it's an interesting thing that most people, and I question this, Brian, in the sense that people have trouble talking about this sometimes,
they do.
Right? They have, this is one of those things when you're younger, especially, you're invincible, right? You're in your 20s, you're never going to be sick. In your 30s, you think about you might be.
Mm-hmm.
In your 40s, you realize it's actually possible.
Yes.
And you feel, in your 50s, you suddenly realize, hey, it's happening,
mm-hmm.
and so forth, it goes on. You know, we're going to continue more, obviously, talking about some of the plans, but how do you overcome some of those thought processes that people have?
It's funny you should say that. I've had more than one employee come up to me and say, I would never buy a cancer plan. I'm just not going to jinx myself. And people don't want to think about cancer. They don't want to go home and say, I bought a cancer plan today. Nobody is waking up this morning going, I want, before I end the day, I want to find some cancer coverage. It's one of those things, and this gets into kind of the meat of how employee benefits are viewed in businesses around the state, is that people really don't become interested until they actually hear about it. If you poll 100 employees at a business and ask them how many are interested in learning about cancer insurance as a possibility of bringing it in so that you guys can purchase it, and drop the question like that, you will probably get 2 or 3 out of 100 people say I'd be interested in buying it. Put them in an educational overview for 15 or 20 minutes. Have them hear somebody talk about it like I just did, and we'll probably enroll 60 to 70 of them. And those are not uncommon numbers. It's when people realize how close to the edge you might be living should something happen to you, and start thinking about what kind of resources do I actually have if my check stopped on Friday from this business or the bill started coming in. And then you're talking about $3 or $4 a week for something that can pay as much as $20,000, $25,000 in my brother's case over a short period of time. That'll take the average employee and maybe wake them up a little bit and say, you know what, I'm not going to miss this opportunity. So oftentimes it's the education process, the short education process, that takes an employee from saying wouldn't have any interest at all to saying, you know what, I think I'm going to plunk down $3.50.
You know, one of the other ones you talk about is the hospital secure care.
Yes.
Now, we just talked about a plan that covers you for extra things. Why do they separate out a hospital secure plan?
So it's interesting because supplemental benefits are basically a buffet. As the employee comes in and listens, they're hearing about.
I don't think of this as a buffet. I'm a big fan of buffets, Brian, and I do not think of this as a buffet. Being upfront with us.
As we walk you down the line of here's an accident plan, here's some life insurance disability. Different things appeal to different people for different reasons. I will tell you that in lots of cases, I think it's just experience. They've been in the hospital, or they've had family members in the hospital. They've had a broken leg, or they have an uncle with cancer. It's the type of stories that are personal to themselves, which I think lead them to saying, I'm more interested today in a hospital plan, or I'm more interested in an accident plan. Life insurance, of course, falls in that same discussion. So to each person, it's personal. My job as a consultant on the supplemental side is not to really talk anybody into any particular plan, but find out where their interest is, along with where their budget is, and make sure that it fits. So a hospital plan is simply a plan that pays you if you're in the hospital. Typically, it pays if you become an inpatient, which means you need to be there 24 hours. But you can have a benefit of, let's say, $2,500 that's paid to you after you've been there 24 hours in 1 minute. It excludes some things at times. Maternity is a common exclusion. If you're there for some cosmetic reason, that's a common exclusion. But otherwise, people can have a plan that they can pull out of their back pocket and know that they'll have a deductible should they ever spend a day or more in the hospital. Now I have a plan that will meet that or at least help chip away at it.
And again, we're talking with Brian Heath from Combined Benefits United, and we're talking about supplemental benefits. One of the other ones that you talked about is an option for critical solutions.
Yes.
Talk to how that's different, for example, from hospital secure.
Right. So a critical solutions or a critical illness policy is typically going to be a lump sum policy, really changing gears here now as far as from treatment-based to diagnosis-based. So if somebody buys a critical illness policy, often what they're doing is they're buying a policy that will help protect other things that they have in place should the worst happen. It's very typical to talk about heart attack, stroke, and cancer. So on a diagnosis of, let's say, heart attack, stroke, or cancer, my client would receive a check from between $5,000 and $75,000, and that would be a lump sum check, again, based on just the diagnosis. I tell the employees in this case, it doesn't matter what happens after that. It doesn't matter how the treatments go or what treatments you have. the triggering point for a critical illness benefit is the diagnosis. There's a lot of financial advisors advising their clients these days about critical illness policies because a lot of clients have things like annuities. Annuities, as most people know, have surrender charges. So if you really had to get after the money, you would pay a surrender charge, typically 10%. Lots of times people are looking at their 401k if there's a large sum of money needed. And we all know that there's at least a 10% penalty for taking money out of your 401k. At times that can be mitigated. But there are certain things that people have in place, even maybe the nest egg that was saved aside for the grandchildren, that they would rather not spend and instead spend a few dollars a week on a critical illness plan that hope they never use it, but if they do, would recreate or create a different pile of cash for them. And a lot of people are seeing that as a way to have an instant savings account should the worst happen.
We're talking with Brian Heath from Combined Benefits United. We're talking about supplemental insurance plans. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOP 100.5 FM. And we'll be right back. Running a company can feel like you're surrounded. A key person quits. A big project presents itself. You need good people fast. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Our contract staffing service will fill a position or find the right talent for a short-term project. Hundreds of companies choose us because we deliver people that fit. Career Management Associates, your contract staffing solution. Go to cmacareer.com.
The best paints for the job site are at the Home Depot, specifically new Glidden Diamond Paint and Primer. It starts at only $23.98 a gallon. It's specially formulated to spray easier and cover walls faster, a lot faster. So you're done and on to the next job faster. Better paint means better jobs. New Glidden Diamond Paint and Primer, starting at just $23.98 a gallon. You'll only find it in one place, the Home Depot. More saving, more doing, U.S. only.
At 154 years old, Verrill Dana has an illustrious history and more than seven generations of legal expertise. With more than 130 attorneys across seven offices from Maine to Washington, D.C., Verrill Dana serves clients across the country and around the world. HR professionals, business leaders, and in-house counsel count on Verrill Dana, one of the premier labor and employment law practices in the Northeast. Contact them today at verrilldana.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by cmacareer.com and maine.dalecarnegie.com. Today, the HR Power Hour is very proud to, of course, talk about its sponsors. Every week, we thank you for being our sponsors. Jackson Lewis, All We Do Is Work. Rudman Winchell, Counselors at Law. Sheehan Finney, Verrill Dana, Attorneys at Law. And, of course, Strategic HR. We thank them because without them, we would not be here each and every week. But, of course, we want to thank the listenership. Over 17,000 strong in over 32 states, we could not be happier. Keep listening each and every week and hopefully providing you the best HR educational radio that is provided. Today we're talking with Brian Heath. He is with Combined Benefits United. We're talking about supplemental benefits. We're talking about life insurance. We're talking about short-term disability. We're talking about long-term disability. We're talking about cancer care, accident care. We're talking about all sorts of stuff, Brian, here this morning. And now we're going to talk about some things that are a little more traditional. How about dental?
Yes. So dental is something that is needed. We really divide employees into two groups, those who know they need dental and those who pretty much go along with just a clean ear to a year. We're lucky enough to have two or three carriers that we use for dental, and those vary from $1,000 to $1,500 per year in coverage. I think everyone's pretty familiar with dental plans. Getting it as part of a supplemental package at work where you can be checking off boxes for I'll take this one and that one, again, with your budget in consideration is important. So a dental plan, we try to market that as something that's as preventive as it is necessary for your everyday expenses. Having dental throughout the course of a lifetime has proven that people have less issues and less problems as they age, and dental plans tend to incent people to go more often. So dental is a very popular product as well on the supplemental side.
Another supplemental one would be voluntary vision insurance.
Yes. Yeah, vision plans come in all shapes and sizes, paying for your annual visit, giving you discounts off glasses. Again, I think that a lot of what these plans do is, on the dental and vision side, is get people involved with their providers so that things aren't going on that are going to cost them a lot more later. So having a full range of benefits like that for an employee, again, it's their own personal choice. But if there's things that are needed in that realm, they can pick up for very, very small money those kind of plans that can make a difference in the future.
How about a wellness program? Those have become very popular in the last few years. A lot of companies are using them to bring down the cost of insurance for company plans. Tell us about a voluntary wellness program.
Sure. So there are lots of different wellness programs. We do a financial wellness program in-house where we'll actually go to an employer who we've maybe done some work with all along and meet with employees on different kinds of budgeting and planning type things, resources that they may not have available to them. There's other wellness programs, though. Lots of our supplemental plans have wellness benefits. So as someone goes and does their annual physical or mammograms or stress tests, they can actually put a claim in and get paid an amount of money so that that will offset that doctor's visit. Again, there's money in the pocket to the employee, but at the same time, they're being incented to go do these things proactively, which again brings down the cost of healthcare because you're seeing things earlier before they might get out of control. So all of those things are part and parcel of a good supplemental package.
Some other insurances that people don't necessarily think about is maybe a legal side.
Sure.
Legal insurance.
Yeah, we don't actually market that. We have dabbled with it time to time. I think it's very important, though. We try to keep the menu somewhat reasonable, but there are legal plans out there that if a company wants us to bring one in, we certainly will. They really help offset the costs and out-of-pocket that a typical employee just might not have the resources to cover. Greatly reduce fees on lawyers, help with court cases that you might not otherwise have because of your funding, and just a general overall sense of having someone in your corner should something happen. So legal plans are prolific. They are part of the menu out there and something that if an employer wants us to bring, we certainly have the resources to do that.
We hear a lot today about identity theft. Mm. Certainly, this is an area where we certainly with the cyber issues that are going on worldwide. Mm-hmm. How can somebody protect themselves, and are there really plans that actually can help in this area?
Yeah, legal plans, I think one of the biggest misunderstandings about the identity theft plans is simply that they keep you from being hacked or they keep you from having your identity stolen. All of the identity theft programs are geared toward helping you repair your credit, help get it figured out. And again, they do have a place in the market. It's an interesting product that really goes back to something we were talking about a minute ago. There are some people we'll talk to that don't have any interest or worries, they don't think, about identity theft, whereas there are other employees who are looking for that kind of thing. So, it's a product that fills a niche, and employees, if they are so inclined, tend to take advantage of them when they can. My business is an interesting business in that I've been in sales a very long time. It's the first time I've been having a product in front of me that I don't really feel like I sell it. I feel like I talk about it. I expose it. I let people look inside and see it. And people are pretty good about making decisions on what they want. And again, it comes down to personal preference. Yeah.
So now that we've gone through all of the different voluntary types of benefits, and there are a lot, right? It is a little bit of a buffet, even though I'm a big fan of buffets, and that doesn't really resonate with me. But we'll just say there's a large list.
Yes, a
How's
large
that?
List.
A large list.
We'll do that.
All right, to check with. We talked a little bit about why organizations, and maybe small businesses especially, don't offer these benefits.
Sure.
One, I suspect that a lot of them don't know about them, right? So let's just start with the fact that that may be one area. They just are probably not aware that they're out there.
Yeah, we just were at the HR convention. Dave, you were there as well. And we did a little survey at the HR convention as far as what are the frustrations regarding voluntary. And on our survey form, a couple of things came back that were interesting. One is that 24% of the people that answered our survey there at the convention said that they do not have a voluntary benefits program. I find that interesting. And then 34% marked down that participation was an issue. So there is something very counterintuitive about our business. An employer will assume, and by doing an informal ask around of employees, if they were to do it that way, find very little interest. We talked about it a little bit earlier. Employees just don't have any idea of all the details and the rich benefits that are available for a very affordable premium. Participation can be greatly reduced that way. When we do a voluntary presentation, we are trying to ensure that we have guaranteed access to the information for everybody. They can mark a no once they've heard the information. That's all fine. We just don't want someone to say no without having any understanding about really what's inside a cancer plan, how rich an accident plan could be, or how much difference a disability program could make. And most employees don't walk around thinking about these things every day, nor are they on the internet at night researching it. So we really feel that it takes an education in front of the employee to hear about those details to fairly judge whether or not this is something that they're interested in. The fact that 24% of the people said that they don't have voluntary at all, I find that there's different levels of experience out there with voluntary. And because it used to be what we would call a nice-to-have product and it's now become a need-to-have product, the styles in the marketplace are much different than they used to be. And so it really calls for a very professional and high-level education and enrollment process as well as service after the sale. So I think employers these days probably would be surprised to see what their employees think. It's the one thing that all employers do almost like they get together and rehearse it. When we go to do an employee education meeting and we collect the surveys afterwards and all the employees have filed back to their cubicles and we're kind of going through each of the surveys one by one, it's, again, they all say the same thing. They are very surprised at the number of people that are saying yes. They had assumed that wasn't the case. They'll say names out loud. I'm surprised Mary or Andy would even think about this. It really is a big chasm between what employers think and even what an employee might tell you on an initial question and actually how it turns out if they do get that education. So employers, I think, need to be more open to it and let their employees decide as opposed to just assuming that there's just not enough money at the end of the week or all those things that are true.
Well, you know, to that point, one of the myths we talk about is that administrating this is costly, it's complex, there's a lot of choices, people have to deal with it a lot. Employers are like, dear God, I have enough problems on my hand, you know, dealing with COBRA and medical insurance and all these plans.
Yeah.
Please, Brian, you know, come on, this is a lot for me to manage. There's so many choices.
Yes. HR people do not want one more thing to do, and I know why, because they have a lot to do. And if they think that it's going to add to the piles on their desk or some angst in the company overall, they're not going to do it, and I don't blame them at all. We like to say that we become your voluntary HR department within your own company. We don't want a single employee going to an HR director for a claims form. We don't want an employee going to an HR director and owner of a company because of a billing issue. We want them calling us and our staff in Hollowell, and we want them to be able to work that through with us. So it is it can become somewhat of a time-consuming issue if someone were to just purchase voluntary benefits and then just try to run it themselves. But I think the companies out there that are good at running it for the employer and do a good job of follow-up as well as all the little things in between, an employer eventually finds out that really all they're doing is a payroll deduct and ensuring that that's done right and the bills are paid and we'll take care of the rest.
One of the other questions, and you kind of mentioned it before, is employers think, hey, this is going to be really expensive, mm-hmm. or employees especially mm-hmm. think, oh my God, cancer, that's got to be expensive,
sure.
for example.
Right.
How do you explain to them, as you have a little bit today, that it's really a very reasonably priced item?
Sure. Employers do have an expense. There's some administration on the payroll side, and they may pay for an extra payroll slot, but it is very minimal once it's set up. Someone needs to have the time, so I make sure employers know about that. On the employee side, my average employee is probably spending $15 a week, $20 a week, and you can spend more than that. But the product mix in the $3 to $7, $8, $9 range per week, once people know the benefit of it, generally becomes something that they feel like they can afford. I had one employer once tell me, Brian, you don't need to come here and talk to my employees. This was at a fast foods chain. She said, they borrow money from me on Thursday night to buy milk on the way home, and they're getting paid on Friday morning. And I totally get that. It's tough out there. We came in and did a presentation anyway, and out of the 12 managers, 8 of them purchased the product. So I think what people are really doing is reallocating their resources. Nobody's going to spend money on things that are just fluffy or feel good at the moment. But when they understand the edge that they live on with today's insurance and how inexpensive these products can be, that becomes a pretty good combination.
We're talking with Brian Heath. He is with Combined Benefits United. We're talking about supplemental benefits. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM, and we'll be right back.
If you're responsible for hiring and firing, you know it can be like a roulette wheel. If your new hire turns out to be a bad hire, well, all you've lost is time and money. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Don't gamble with your hiring. We have a better solution. We've helped hundreds of companies like yours find the right talent, and we guarantee it. Career Management Associates delivers people that fit. Go to cmacareer.com.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and Maine.DaleCarnegie.com. Okay, we're talking with Brian Heath. He is back for the last segment here from Combined Benefits United. Combined Benefits United's been around since?
Yeah, Combined Benefits United has been about 12 years. We actually have three divisions, two of which I don't really talk about with my employers, but it's interesting that they do come into play. We have a senior division. We have we sell more than 50% of all the Medicare policies here in Maine through Combined Benefits United. And then we have a financial division, which is prolific, and we have a huge number of clients that use Combined Benefits for their retirement needs, for rolling over 401ks, Social Security questions, and those kind of things. Where that comes into play for my employee that I think sometimes separates a little bit from my competitors is that we can bring that expertise into the workplace should an employee need that. An employee is talking to me at the beginning for an accident and a cancer plan, but since they know that we roll over a 401k or we have the expertise to advise them on life insurance or maybe there's a parent that has Medicare, I pass that off to other people, other employees in our company that really do a very, very good job of handling that. So we don't become the financial services firm for a company, but we do have the resources to help in addition to the basic plans that we sell.
So as we get ready to wrap up the show today, Brian, what is the one story that you could tell the audience about something or one of these plans that has really helped an individual? And is one of those stories that you say to yourself, yeah, that could happen to me.
Yeah. About 3 months ago, I got a phone call at my office. It was on a Friday afternoon. The gentleman's voice on the other end was very unsteady. He was calling me on his ride back from Central Maine Medical Center in Lewiston to his home in Wilton, and he had just been diagnosed with esophagus cancer. He was especially disturbed because he had seen his brother go through it a few years before. He was calling me to find out if he indeed did buy that cancer plan way back so many years ago. He remembered our company. It was coming out of his paycheck. As I listened to him talk, he said things to me. I don't know him at all, and we weren't personal friends, but he was discussing things like his mortgage and how he'd be able to keep the house and all of the things that were starting to tumble through his brain as he was trying to get his thoughts around this diagnosis that he just had. Unfortunately, the last call I received was from his wife just this past a few months ago, and he had passed. She was already getting letters from lawyers demanding payments on bills to the hospital, but was reassured that as the policy started paying out, they were going to be well taken care of. Those are just isolated circumstances, I think, that can happen to any of us at any time. And I take a lot of pride in marketing a product that I know we hope nobody ever uses. Nobody buys it because they think they're going to use it. But the amount of comfort and financial stability that can be created because of these products, I think, is pretty important. And stories like that tend to drive that point home.
So as HR professionals, as employees, think about these plans. The three things that they should do right now. Call you, obviously.
Yeah, call me right away. I think that they should think about their employees and the actual situation that they're in. Employees these days, it is so ubiquitous in the news as far as deductibles and coinsurance. Everybody isn't just talking about it as they pass each other in the hall. But there is an angst that employees have that has to do with the amount of financial exposure they potentially have should something happen. And it's fairly unspoken. these aren't products that they can buy when they go into their local auto insurance dealer. Nobody's coming to their house to sell. If an employer doesn't let someone like myself in to describe these products to the employees and give them a good education so they can make a good choice, then really there is going to be an absence of that option for those employees. I think that employees these days, they realize how close to the edge they really live. When an employer tells me that their employees don't have money to buy these products, I don't disagree with them. They don't have money to buy these products. People are very tight. But when they know of an option that can make it better for them in the long run, I think that's where employers need to think about bringing these products in and let the employees have a look.
Yeah, I would agree. I think the three things that I got away from the show are very simple. One, that employees really do want them, and let the employees make that decision. Mm-hmm. I think that it's, you know, from my perspective, they can relieve financial pressure. They are things that are things that people don't really want to talk about but are real in life. And they're more cost-effective than I think than people realize. And those are the three things that I take away from this, saying that, hey, you know, employers out there, think about this. It's only going to be something that, you know, they're going to talk about. And who knows, really, because you don't know what somebody has behind the curtain.
Right, absolutely. I think that sums it up very, very well.
You're listening to the HR Power Hour. Brian, I want to thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thanks for having me.
As you know, where can somebody reach you?
Reach us right in our Hollowell office. We're a Maine-based company, 620-7265. I'll give you my cell phone. It's 242. It's an easy one to remember. 242. The rest is all fives. 5555. 242-5555. Give me a call. I'll give you a little bit of information.
Area code 207.
207 here in Maine, yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And you sell outside of Maine?
We do. We have agents and brokers really across the United States. Our practice on the voluntary side is really very strong here in Maine as compared to the other states, but Combined Benefits United has brokers all over.
Let's see if we can solve that problem.
Absolutely.
All right, Brian, thank you so much for being on the show. Everybody can go to hrpowerhour.com after this show, and you will certainly be able to click on the link to Brian's organization and to Brian directly. And certainly at this time, I would tell you, think about it, because it's something you may not have thought of in the past, but it's something that could help you in the future. Brian, thank you for being on the show today.
Appreciate it.
You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM. And now your HR Tip of the Week. Your HR Tip of the Week is being sponsored by VeralDana.com.
Hello, this is Richard Moon from Veral Dana's Labor and Employment Law Group. And we need to talk about an exciting new opportunity at the United States Senate. For the first time in over decades, there's a real potential for the National Right to Work Bill being passed by Congress. You can expect unions and their political allies to pull out all the stops. The results in Wisconsin from the governor's actions there demonstrate to unions the consequences when there is no longer forced union membership and forced payment of dues. The issue will turn in the Senate on Republicans and whether they can be held to vote for the bill. So if you care about employee freedom of choice, let your senators know to vote for the Right to Work Bill. If you want to know more about the Right to Work Bill, contact someone from Veral Dana's Labor and Employment Law Group.
And that's your HR Tip of the Week, sponsored by VeralDana.com. Next week on the HR Power Hour, our guest is David Stearns, president of Dale Carnegie Maine, and he discusses the value of training. You know, measuring ROI on training and getting a real value out of it for your organization can be a challenge. Listen to David and I speak about how a relevant, simple leadership training program, something that really makes a difference and gets people engaged in your organization, can really make an ROI on your training. That's on the next HR Power Hour. Thank you for listening, and catch us every week at 10 a.m. on News Talk WLOB 1310 a.m. or streaming live on WLOBradio.com. Podcasts of this show and every show are available at hrpowerhour.com. Have a great week, everyone, and remember, HR management is critical to your business's success.